Welcome to the Voices of Freedom podcast by Freedom a la Carte. We're your co-hosts, Devin and Mandy. Each week, you'll hear mind-blowing interviews from survivors and professionals, as well as actionable tips that you can implement in your life to become an advocate for human trafficking survivors. Thank you for spending time with us today. Now let's jump into this week's episode of Voices of Freedom.
We are really excited to have Rose join us for today's episode. Woohoo! I call her Rosie. While at Freedom, Rosie's graduated from Catch Court and Amethyst. She's gotten her driver's license through Freedom's license reinstatement program. She's been working really, really hard on getting her GED. And in addition to that, Rose has participated in Freedom's Savings Match program and was able to purchase a car through our partnership with Riker Automotive. Since getting her license, Rose has become one of our star delivery drivers. So if you get deliveries from Freedom, you might see her dropping off your catering order. She's also a dog mom to Raina that was a puppy she got last year. She's one of my good friends. We like to ride roller coasters and stuff. She doesn't really like it at first, but... Yeah, so that's my introduction. Rose, why don't you share just a little bit about yourself, how you're feeling today, what'd you do this weekend?
I mean, I'm a little nervous, honestly.
Yeah,
I don't know why, but I guess when I speak, I always get a little nervous.
A lot of people get nervous. We were super nervous our first time.
Yeah.
At least I was. I don't know about Mandy, but I was just like, I forgot how to talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
gets easier.
See, it felt really goofy, just me and Devin in here.
I bet.
Talking, not really to each other, but with each other.
Yeah.
So
it's nice to have someone else in here.
Yeah.
It's normal. How was your weekend?
So it was good. It was relaxing.
You didn't do anything?
I slept. Like, I just, like, slept in Sunday, and then I watched TV, laid around in bed, and then I look forward to that. That's, like... And one of my friends were like, oh, why don't you get up? And I'm like, no, it's called boundaries and self-care.
Good for
yes,
you.
Girl.
Sunday is my day.
Yes.
And then Monday, I had a doctor's appointment. So, you know, Monday is like my day to run around and take care of that kind of stuff. And most Sundays, I try to, like, do something for myself. Mm. Maybe, like, every other Sunday, because... the other Sundays, like, I like to get my sister's kids and do something with them, too.
Aww.
When I'm able.
Who was the concert that you went to the other day?
Oh, yeah!
It was Kevin Gates.
I don't know who that is.
What?
I don't think so. What
can I tell you guys this? This is hilarious.
Yes, tell us.
I was, okay, so me and my friend were waiting in line for the Kevin Gates concert. And there was, like, two little girls behind us, and, you know, we were talking, and she's like, yeah, I've followed his music for a couple months now, and I really like him. And then we started talking about our tickets, and I pulled up my ticket on my phone, and it said, and she said, who's Kevin Gates? I said, what do you mean? She was there to see a Christian band.
Oh.
That was, like, upstairs, and Kevin was like...
how weird that they
I
have...
I know. I was like, she would have been shocked if she would have went there.
I don't think Kevin Gates is a Christian band whatsoever.
It was. I was dying. I felt kind of bad because I couldn't stop laughing.
That's your second Kevin Gates concert, too, because I went the last time he was here, and you and your sister were there.
Yeah.
That's super funny.
So I guess we can dive in to why we're here, and that's to hear your story. So, like we said earlier, if you want to start, like, at a timeline or whatever's comfortable for you.
Yeah. So it's, like... So when I was younger, I'm from Hillsboro, Ohio, and my grandparents, my mother struggled with the lifestyle.
What do you mean by the lifestyle?
Drugs. She was addicted to crack cocaine and prostitution. So
okay.
When she got pregnant with me, she was still using, and she left the hospital, and I went with my grandparents. Mm. So I thought they were mom and dad because she was never around. Mm. And I thought that my grandparents were mom and dad to about 6 years old. And I found out that they really were grandma and grandpa. And that kind of like destroyed my whole world. Mm. It really did. I was devastated. I didn't understand. And so when I found out who my real mom was and she came around, she was still using drugs.
Yeah.
But like I wanted to know her, but she wasn't capable. Like,
yeah.
Mental health. Like,
you know that now, but when you were a kid, how did you take that?
Oh, I felt like I wasn't good enough. I was sad. I was sad. I felt like I wasn't good enough.
Like you felt lost. Like it was about
like, and I didn't know. Like I just didn't understand.
Oh yeah, I'm sure a lot of confusion for a 6-year-old kid.
I didn't understand, and then when and then my grandparents, they were alcoholics.
Oh.
So I seen a lot of violence in the home. And then my biological mom ended up getting pregnant with my little sister, and she went to a treatment facility, and she started got a visitation. I remember me and my little sister going. It was kind of like Amethyst,
where she was at,
where like she had an apartment, and she got a visitation with us. But and I would like ask her questions about my father.
How old were you at this time?
12.
12? Okay.
Yeah, and I would ask her questions. Well, no, I was younger. I think I was like 9, 10, about 10, 10 mm-hmm. years old. And I would ask her questions about my father, and, you know, she would start yelling at me and tell me, like, oh, I was in jail, and he came to visit me, and he told me to abort you because he doesn't want you.
Oh.
So that made me feel like, I don't know, like unwanted. So, yeah. You know, I was, like, searching for, like, love that I wasn't getting.
Mm-hmm. I can relate to that.
And then, you know, she got my little sister back in her custody. But, like, she never... And I always thought, well, why didn't she come back for me? Why wasn't I not good enough?
Mm-hmm. And you start taking it personal.
I did. And I don't... Today, I don't. But then I did.
Yeah.
And it really... It really hurt me as a child. And that was when I started getting into drugs. Like, I was 12 years old. And my grandparents drank alcohol and smoked weed, so it was in the house. So it wasn't hard for me to get to it. And I started hanging out with older people. Like, I started hanging out with this girl that was 15. And her dad actually was a meth cook.
Oh my.
And she asked me if I wanted to get high, and I thought she was talking about marijuana at first. And I'm like, of course. So we went back there, and she pulled out, like, a light bulb and a straw. And I'm like, what is that? It's not marijuana.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, it'll make you happy. It'll make you hyper. And I was 12, and I started smoking methamphetamines.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I think, like, 6 months in, my grandmother signed me out of the 6th grade, and I said I was going to do homeschooling. But never did. And I don't think...
What was your grandma's reason for signing you out of school at 6th grade? Do you know? Or do you remember?
I told her I was going to do homeschooling.
Oh, so you guys agreed that mm-hmm. that's how you would do it. Okay.
Yeah. But I never did homeschooling. I started running the streets...
In like, Hillsboro?
In Hillsboro.
Isn't Hillsboro kind of like
it's country?
She's like, I'm out here running the county roads.
Yeah.
What streets are you running, girl?
In these woods and these cornfields, you know, and these meth labs and disappearing for 3 days.
Is there a lot of meth labs in Hillsboro?
I mean, there was when I was younger. I don't know about now. I don't really... Go out there. Like, I don't really know it like I did mm-hmm. back then.
Yeah.
And,
It seems like meth is more in, like, the little country towns.
It is, because you can, like, get a camper out in the woods and cook. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then, so where did I leave off? I was getting high on meth at 12, signed out of school. And I was supposed to do homeschooling, but that never happened. And then I met this guy. I met this guy that was, like, 9 years older than me. And I was at the camper with that girl's dad that would cook. And he, this guy that was 9 years older than me, come to buy some drugs from that guy. And he started talking to me. And, you know, I was like, oh, I'm getting attention.
Yeah.
And telling me all these stories, like, oh, you're pretty. And I was hanging out with him. And then he would tell me, like, oh, I love you. And I was scared. I didn't really say it back at first. Well, one night, me and that guy were getting high, and he ended up, he couldn't get any more drugs from Hillsboro, so he ended up taking me to Dayton, and that was my first time that I was trafficked. I was 13. I was in Dayton, Ohio, and I was scared. I didn't, I just wanted to go home. So basically, I just did what I felt like I had to do because he had me trapped. And, yeah. And then when I made it back home, I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell nobody. I just kept it to myself. And my drug use got, I don't know, probably even worse.
Yeah. And then, you have all these feelings and shame probably in these, you had no clue what was happening to you.
Yep. And then the school started, the children's services came, and I'm like, oh, you know, you need to get her back in school. So my grandmother put me back in school.
Like regular school?
Yeah, public school. And I started going to school, and then I met another guy. I don't know, I was 14, and he was 19, and at first, like, I thought he was amazing at first. I loved him so much, and he was really sweet to me. And then as time went on, he was really jealous and manipulative, and he started putting his hands on me. And it got so bad, he would beat my face up so bad that when I would go to school, I would try to cover it up, but they would call children's services because they thought maybe my grandmother was beating me.
Oh, yeah.
And I would lie and say, no, I got jumped. No, I got in a fight. No, I fell.
You were protecting him.
And make up all these stories. And my grandmother knew. She tried to stab him one day because she knew that it was him doing it. And she tried to keep him away from me, but I was bad. I would sneak out my window.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
I think I get it, but I think a lot of people don't. If you could share in your words, if you're comfortable, why do you think you protected him or kept going back to him?
You know, I used to think, well, maybe if I didn't do this, or maybe if I would have did that, he wouldn't hit me. Maybe it's my fault. Maybe I deserved it.
So you,
he must really love me. Those are the things I really used to think. Like, maybe I shouldn't have did that. Maybe I should have did this.
So you really believe that it was your fault and that was his way of...
In that time, I did.
Yeah. That's what I wanted you to share.
Yeah. In that time, I really thought that. I thought, oh, he must really love me in that time. I don't think that now.
Yeah. Growth and therapy changes people.
Yeah. So I ended up getting out of that. He ended up, that was a really bad. And he was selling crack cocaine, that guy, and the feds ended up coming and getting him, and he went to the federal penitentiary. So that was how I got away from him.
Wow.
Is when he got locked up.
For selling drugs?
Yeah, and he got caught with a gun or something like that.
Okay.
And
It's like your higher power doing for you what you couldn't do for yourself at the time.
Yeah, because my grandmother even sent me up to Columbus and to my sister to try to get me away. And that didn't help because I found crack cocaine. And my
Which sister?
Tara.
Okay.
My grandmother sent me to Tara's house because my oldest sister, she was in the lifestyle as well. And I was probably about 14, 15 when I came to Columbus. And my oldest sister, Holly, she took me to my first trap house. And that
Can we talk about what a trap house is? Like, can one of you explain that?
It's where you buy drugs. For me, my first time in a trap house, it was like this moment of excitement. Like, I had arrived. There were people getting high. There were drug dealers, drugs, loud music. Yeah. All the windows are covered. In the moment, it was like the place I personally wanted to be. Like, I walked in and was like, this is where I want to be.
Yeah. So I have a stupid question, and I've thought this before, and I've had other people ask me since I've been working here, and they're like, why did the police not go in and, like, raid those homes, like, those trap houses? Like, if people who are high can find it, how can an officer not find them?
Oh, they do.
Yeah, they do.
Okay. I've been in a couple SWAT raids.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good question for law enforcement, because I don't know all the legal stuff behind it, but I think in a sense they have to have enough proof.
Yeah,
they have to have like evidence without a doubt before they can just go in. That's any home, residence, or whatever.
Gotcha.
You can suspect all you want without proof. I feel like, you know, they can't do anything about it.
It's crazy.
And, you know, out there, for me personally, trap houses were safe. That was my safe place. Being on the streets was scary and unknown and safe, at least in the trap house. If I knew who was running it, I knew that I could be safe in there. As crazy as that sounds.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel, Rosie, but...
So you were at your first trap house.
Yeah. And I was really nervous, but it, like Mandy said, it was exciting, and I was with my sister. Like, I adored I still do. I still look up to her, and I still...
She's sober now.
Yeah, I would still do anything for her. Like, I just want, because when we were little, like, she took care of me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I remember her potty training me and teaching me how to wipe my butt, and like I remember her teaching me how to tie my shoes.
Mm.
Like, I remember her fighting with me to send me to school when I didn't want to. Like, and when she left the household, I was devastated. That really hurt me. So when I got, you know, there, and she was, I was nervous, it was exciting, and I just wanted to be with my sister, and I seen the things that she was doing, which our biological mom introduced her to the lifestyle. Because she, my oldest sister went through a lot with my biological mom that I didn't have to go through. Because my biological mom left me at the hospital
mm-hmm.
after she had me. So I didn't know her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Holly got dragged through the dirt with her.
Mm.
So she taught her, and I seen what she was doing, and I was like, oh, okay, so this is what we do.
Because you didn't know any different.
Yeah.
It just felt normal.
Yeah. Any more questions?
Well, so you go to the trap house, and then
yeah.
And then what? Where does your life go from there?
Besides downhill?
Yeah, right. Well, that's crazy. So I was like 14, 15. Well, after that, and then like, I don't know, I went back to Hillsboro and I started drinking really heavily. Like, I was an alcoholic at 15. Like, I was waking up drinking and going to sleep drinking.
Were you at your grandma and grandpa's again?
Yeah. And I was going to school, and then I got out for the summer, and I started getting into pills, like Percocet, pain pills, and then I came back to Columbus, and I met this girl. She sold weed and pills, and I would buy from her, and me and her, I think she was like 10 years older than me. Maybe more than that. I mean, I was like 16 at this point, and I think she was like 28.
Wow.
And me and her started dating. And then, like, she was an alcoholic too. So I got to be really toxic.
Yeah.
And I would kind of like run off from her and like go on a binge and like smoke crack for a couple days and then come back. And then me and her would fight and stuff. And me and her ended up splitting ways. Like, it just got really toxic. I ended up going to jail for felony assault with a deadly weapon against her. And after that, we just stayed away. When I got out of jail, I just stayed away from her. Okay. And then I met Portia. I was like 18, 17, 18. And I was still a heavy drinker. And she didn't like that. She tried to get me to, she tried to help me to stop drinking and like limit me. But you can't limit an alcoholic.
Right.
I would go, I'd put my hands on her. And like she would try to hold me down and I would hurt her. Like, no. You're going to go get me more alcohol or I'm going to do it myself. And then we was like in a really bad car accident where someone was killed. I thought that we had like hit a dog or something, but it was a human. And that kind of fucked me up. So then I started drinking even more.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine that.
Mm-hmm. And she ended up checking herself into a mental health net care. And she went there, and I was drinking even more. And then I would take off, and I would smoke crack. And then I went out to Hillsborough to try to do better and, like, get away from stuff. But it didn't work because then I started doing meth again.
So you were aware that what you were doing is not normal, not safe.
Mm-hmm. But by that time, like, so I think I knew when I was 15 and I was standing in the trap house.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is not normal. But I didn't know what to do.
Right.
I didn't have no support or, like, I wasn't shown anything different.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, this is what it must be. That's just what I thought.
So when you were in school or children's services or involved with children's services, resources were never made available to you? For addiction treatment, trauma.
A caseworker never spoke to me about addiction. That's nothing crazy. Like that.
But they knew what was going on? Do you think they knew?
You know what? I remember, I'm sorry, like, rewind. I have an uncle that did over 10 years in prison and was released and come to live with us. And prison really messed him up. And, like, he used to beat on me and, like, he hit my mom, like, he put lit cigarette out in my face. I used to watch him, like, kick his wife's face in with steel-toed boots, stab her, all kinds of crazy stuff. And I used, and then, like, he put a knife to my sister Holly's throat. And my grandmother mom tried to, like, coach me into saying it was a comb so he wouldn't go back to prison. And, like, I had to do counseling over that, but I was told not to say nothing.
Yeah.
So I would just go for the jelly beans.
Because the counselor had jelly beans?
Yeah.
I mean, what kid wouldn't go for
so
the jelly beans?
So I would
beans?
Just sit there and eat jelly beans. Oh, my
God. That's, I mean, I'm laughing.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. It was really fucked sad. Up. And he strangled my dog. He was, prison really messed him up. It really did. Like, I used to have some type of feelings towards that, but I forgive him today. I don't know.
Wow.
I'm a really forgiving person.
But that's...
Recovery teaches us that, and we open our eyes that...
But sometimes... And that's true. And I'm glad that I found, like, recovery and forgiveness and recovery. But sometimes, like, with my friendships, like, I'm too forgiving, and I love that I still, like, I've seen the darkest places in the streets, like, really got hurt and have seen some shit. But, like, I'm so glad that that didn't change, like, my heart today, like, because I'm still so forgiving. But I think it's also, it hurts me, too, because I can be too forgiving and let people run all over me.
Yeah. Boundaries are hard.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. The streets didn't harden your heart.
Yeah. I mean, when I was out there, well, you know.
We all have to put on a yeah. tough front when we're out
there. I learned that quick because in the beginning I didn't. I didn't know that. But I learned real quick, though.
Yeah. So, you know, you spent time in the streets, and I'm assuming at some point you probably started having interactions with law enforcement.
Yeah.
Were you an adult, or did it start happening?
When I started having the police pick me up, I was an adult by then. I think I was, like, 22. And I would go to jail. You know, I don't remember the first couple times I went to jail. Like, I don't remember. But then, what I do remember is, I probably, like, I don't know, after my first couple times, I remember going to jail, and I remember that, Judge Ted Barrows saying, I'm gonna give you 90 days because I think you're better than this. And I was, like, shocked that a judge said that.
Yeah.
Because I never... Because I've been going in and out of jail, like, since I was 17. And I never had anyone say, like, I think you're better than this. And I remember that. And then my sister, she ended up going to prison, but Pina Estabrook, she used to be the coordinator of Catch Court, and my sister Holly told her, hey... My little sister's still out there. You couldn't help me, but you can help her. So every time I went to jail, Hannah would come visit me. And she would tell me, like, hey, I have a program that can help you. And I don't trust you. I don't trust you. I don't trust you. Can I just do my jail time? Like, and she's like, no, I can help you. Why don't you want to do it? And she'd come see me every time. One time she asked me, she's like, why don't you want to do it? And I said, I'm just not going to waste your time. Because I really felt like I was going to die out there in the streets. I thought that I was worthless and this is it. This is what I was made for. There's no way out. This is it. That I really believed that.
We need really tissues. You guys can't see, but we all have tears in our eyes. It's emotional stuff. But Hannah's amazing.
She is.
She never gives up on people.
No, she doesn't. She was there. She was my go-to. Hannah was. I turned her down a couple times for a while. And I remember my sister... So I remember being out there, and I was messed up. Like, I was skin and bones. And I hadn't seen my oldest sister for a while, like a year or more, over a year. She went to prison. And I was on the corner of like Yale and Sullivan in Columbus. And I had like my coat up over my head. It was cold. And I was sitting on a step and I heard someone say, "Hey, would you like a hygiene bag?" And I pulled my coat down and it was my sister.
Aww.
And we noticed each other. And like I jumped up and like we held on to each other and hugged. And like I remember that day and I remember how I felt. And I felt so lost. And it was really hard to watch her walk away. But I was like so proud of her. I was so freaking proud of her. And ever since then, she, for like over a year, I think, she would come out every Sunday looking for me to give me a little packed lunch and a little hygiene bag. 'Cause she has that nonprofit Reaching for the Stars where they go out every Sunday and do that for the girls that are struggle out there. And I would look forward to that. And she used to tell me, one time I was walking and she was driving and she tried to pick me up to take me to go get ice cream. I didn't want to get in the car with her because I didn't trust her. I was like, "No, you got clean. You went to Amethyst." I was so proud of her, but I said, "I can't do that."
What do you think she was going to do with you?
I thought she was going to, like, try to take me to jail or something. So, like,
take you to treatment?
Yeah. I was like, "You're going to turn me in. I've got warrants. You're going to try to take me to detox, and I'm not going with you." But eventually, I did end up getting in the car with her, and that was the best ice cream I ever had. Yeah, it was.
I love your guys' relationship.
Yeah.
And that you've remained so close through it all. Like, things that are meant to destroy people. And your guys' bond has just gotten stronger and stronger. And I remember I was in treatment when Holly was. And her just being worried to death about you.
We need to get Holly on here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh. She will be on here and taking the whole show away.
She will. She will run the show.
I love Holly. I don't know her very well, but yeah. Whenever I see her, I'm like, gosh, like, why is she always so well put together? Like, she's like a fashionista.
Yeah. Her clothes.
Yeah.
She's still human.
Yeah.
No, but she did. She would talk about you a lot and just, like, pray and ask for prayers and ask everyone to, like, keep, like, pray you into sobriety. And, I mean, eventually it worked.
Yeah.
So how did you end up in catch court? Because you said that you kept lying hand in
hand. Like, yeah, I did. And I went back out there. And, you know, I had some stuff happen to me. That was really bad. I ended up getting a blood infection and was hospitalized. I had to go to a nursing home to do rehabilitation to walk again.
Oh, my gosh.
I had a PICC line in my arm. And none of that changed me. None of that changed me. Like, I still was, like, I don't know, I felt trapped. And then I ended up going to jail, and I got indicted on some felony charges, and the prosecutor was like, "Oh, you know, we can help you. There's catch court." And I think Gwen was the one who came and seen me, because she was the probation officer for catch court.
Mm-hmm.
And
if you haven't listened to our podcast with Gwen, it's a couple episodes back.
Yeah. And they said that they could help me. So, and I wasn't really sure, but I'm like, At this point, I mean, I remember, like, okay, so I was in a house. I was in a house where they sold drugs out of. And I guess they had been watching the house for a while. Because they knew I was there. And they knew, they knew I was there because when they put me in the back of the cruiser, they already had my mugshot pulled up on the screen.
Wow.
So when they raided the house and I went, like, I remember, like, sitting there, no life for hours, like, just, like, praying to God, like, let this be the one to, like, kill me. It was like when I would try to overdose myself purposely, I never could. But then I would accidentally overdose, but I'd always like wake up in the hospital or like the doorman would Narcan me or something.
What's a doorman for our listeners who don't know?
A doorman is the guy who watches the door at the drug house. And he's the one who like lets people in and lets people out, keeps the door locked.
Yeah. Some people might know that was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking they might of, like, a doorman at a hotel.
They might do a perimeter check and, like, walk around to make sure they don't see any police hanging around.
Yeah, watching the block.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, most people probably think what you thought, Devin.
What did you think?
Like a doorman at a hotel.
Like
a bellboy.
I was like,
but can I get your bags?
Yeah.
But most people probably think...
That's why I'm on this podcast. Just because I ask silly, dumb questions that no one else knows.
Well, I mean, I guess you wouldn't know if you didn't lived it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, and I didn't know. Like, I was scared. I didn't know. And then, I waited in jail. And I thought about it a lot. Like, I'm like, oh, what am I doing? Are they going to help me? What's my life going to look like? And I would go to these Monday little groups in jail for catch court.
Mm-hmm.
And,
had you guys crossed paths yet?
In the streets, we never did, I don't think. If we did, I don't remember.
Yeah.
I actually
You was an East Sider?
Because weren't you guys out at the same, around the same
time? I was on the West Side.
Were you?
And then I moved wherever the guys I was running with moved. So we'd be on the East Side, the North Side, South Side, West Side. I ended up on the East Side, and that's where I got sober.
Yeah. I would bounce back and forth from the West Side to the South Side. But I would go to these groups that they would have on Mondays in jail for catch court. Send to me, because I wanted to go to Amethyst. And they're like, oh, no, we think you should, like, get some time out of Columbus. We're going to send you to the Georgie Harris House in Waverly, Ohio.
And you're like, fine.
I didn't want to do that. I did not want to. But I did, and I'm glad that they did, because I needed it, and it helped me.
Aww.
And then I transitioned. I was there for 4 months, graduated, then transitioned back to Columbus, and went to Amethyst. And I was there for... I graduated catch court first. My 2 years of catch, I graduated catch court first.
And then went to Amethyst?
No. Oh. And then I was at Amethyst, but, and then I graduated court first.
Oh.
And then I thought, listen, this is still how sometimes my thinking can be messed up. I was like, oh, well, I can just leave now. And I'm like, why would you do that? Like, you came this far, worked this hard on yourself. You better stay and graduate Amethyst.
Yes.
And I did. So I did. And then I had a little red car, like Freedom, Susan Triumphant, she helped me.
Who's Susan Triumfo, for those who don't know?
Oh, man. I love... She has been there since day one. She was there when I pled into catch court, when I came in the courtroom in handcuffs. And she's like, I don't know, supportive services. She works at Freedom a la Carte, but, like, they partnership with catch court, and she would always be at court every week. And, like, if I needed anything... I remember I think I needed some clothes because I came from the streets... from jail and didn't really have much. And my sister, bless her, because she helped me with a lot. But I think I needed something, and Susan helped me get it. She would always help me get whatever I needed. And I told her, I was like, oh, you know, like, I have reinstatement, and she helped me get my license.
So were you working at, in the workforce development program yet? With Freedom?
I think I was. Oh, I remember. it was right before I graduated Catch Court, and I was like, I think I might have called a meeting. Like, oh, I want a meeting with Hannah and Gwen.
Look at you.
And I'm like, I want to work. And this is what I'm going to do.
I feel like that is so you still today. You're just like, this is what I'm going to do.
And they shot me down. And they were like,
They're like, not yet.
And then Gwen was like, why don't you work for Freedom? And I looked at her crazy, like, I don't know.
Where did you want to work? What was your original plan? I'm curious. Like, I'm sure you had it already set to go in your mind.
I don't even remember.
You don't even remember now?
No.
You were gung-ho on it.
I wanted to do some classes, but I don't, was it? I don't remember. I really don't. Ask Gwen, she might remember. Because I was serious. I was really serious.
I believe you. I can see you going in there like, this is what we're doing.
I was serious.
And they're like, no, you're not.
I can see you doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
You both are very
headstrong. We can share my stories from Catch Court another time.
And
so why didn't you want to work at Freedom? Because it just wasn't your plan.
It wasn't my plan. It wasn't my idea. And like, I just never thought of it. I just never thought of it. And I'm like, no. I was like, no. But then I was like, you know, I slept on it. Just, you know, because, like, I really did, like, when they say, oh, you know, like, be patient, do what you're suggested, I really took that stuff serious. Like, I really did. I took everything that was suggested to me.
You're still like that today. Like, you still, if you're presented with a decision to make or something of that realm or whatever, you wait.
Yeah.
You don't make decisions quickly, and that's a really good quality about you.
Yeah. And well, it took time. It took time for me to get there. And I remember when I first got in, like, at the Waverly Rehab, I was like, oh, I don't want to do this. And, like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to give myself a week, and a week would pass. Oh, I'm going to give myself, you know, a month, and a month would pass. And I'm like, oh, 3 months. And 3 months passed. 6 months. 6 months passed. And I was like, when I get to my year, I'm leaving. When I got to my year, I was like, I went to Catch Court, and I'm like, I don't want to leave.
Aww.
I did not want to leave. I was scared.
Mm, yeah.
And I didn't want to go. I just kept giving myself time. But now bounce back to where we were.
Working at Freedom.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or not wanting to, actually.
I didn't want to, but you know, I slept on it, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. And then, so I think I applied, and I got hired, and I remember having to get up, like, 3 hours early extra early, whatever, because I had to ride the bus
all the way to
Henderson to show up at 8. Like, I had to get up at, like, 5 or something like that to be here by 8. It was ridiculous because the bus was a two-hour bus long ride.
Oh, wow.
And I did that, and then my oldest sister, Holly, she blessed me with a little car, my little red Honda. I loved that little red Honda. But every time I turned around, yeah, Susan helps me get my license. They paid for my first month's insurance, and they paid for my $60 for my first payment on my reinstatement fee.
Referring to Freedom?
Yeah. And then I took it over from there. And it felt good to, like, I think it was like $500, and I paid it off. In payments, but I did.
But you did it.
You know? And that probably sounds crazy to some people, but that's a lot for me.
It's not crazy.
That's a lot for anybody. Like, getting even, like, people, regular people get tickets and then having to pay a chunk of money. And, yeah, it sucks, but it's, like, such a good feeling when you're done.
I was like, oh, you know, I did that and being a responsible adult.
Yeah.
Like, who would have thought that I would ever... But every time I turned around, there was something going wrong with that car. Mm-hmm. I remember I don't know what I was doing. I was out running around. I went tanning, and I was out east, and, like, I went to turn to get on the freeway.
Rose and your tanning.
And my car just went, and it, like, just, like, stopped, and it wouldn't move. And I'm like, I called April Thacker crying. Aww. Like, my car won't move, April. She's like, Rose, where are you at? Why are you out east?
Oh, I know, April. Questioning your every move.
Yes. And I'm like, oh, I was tanning. And she, you know, they helped me get my car. And then I did some kind of thing and then it happened to me again. I went to go speak and tell my story at a school, and my car did the same thing. It was like the axle or something. Both of the axles went out. So I'm like, yeah, I'm like, this car, I put a lot of money into that car. And
that's the worst feeling.
I was like, this ain't working. Because every time I'm like, my starter, both axles, like, something kept going wrong with this car. So I remember Paula, she was like, Rose, I'm doing an event at OSU and I'm speaking, and I would really love for you to join me to share a little bit. So I'm like, oh, yeah. So, you know, we go, and then she started telling me about all, like, you know, she's taken to present this match program. And that's where you save $1,500, and they will match you $1,500 to get you a car, a reliable car. So I'm like, oh, that's great, you know, and... it came through. Paula said it came through. And then I had went to April and I said, April, I'm ready. I've got the money. And she's like, well, I need you to bring me a copy of your bank statement, your ID, insurance. And I think it was like 3 days. And April was like, oh, they've got your car. And I was the first employee to do the match program.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know you were the first one.
I was the first one that did the match program.
And that's the blue SUV you have, right?
Yes.
Yep. It's a nice little car.
It is. It's a nice little car. And I think I've had it for like a year and a half now.
I did not know you were the first savings match person.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So do you want to talk a little bit about, well, I guess you kind of did, like, what impact the Workforce Development Program had on your life so far? Like,
Yeah. Support, like, if I needed something, I can just be like, hey, I need help with this, my car. When I first started working here, and April Thacker took me to open up my first bank account, because I didn't know what to do. Mm. And she was by my side every step of the way.
Did she hound you about doing a budget?
Oh, my God. But you know what, Mandy?
She did it with me.
She hounded me about a budget, but you know what? And I listened to it. And you know what? And when something went wrong with my car, I had all the money to get it fixed myself.
Yeah.
Because of her and her budget that she would hound me about.
I used to be so mad, like, I'm like, what? You're being nosy, that's what I'm like, you want to know how much money I have,
I just
why?
Can't even imagine that out of you,
like,
I'm pure like, sarcasm,
that's hilarious,
she used to chase me around, you ready to do your budget today, I'm like, no, I have work to do,
yeah, I didn't know a lot of things, I didn't know that there was boundaries, like, I remember going into treatment, and they're like, oh, you gotta set boundaries. I'm like, what is a boundary? What are they talking about? Is it, like, physical?
Like, do we put tape up or something?
Like, you stay
practicing
behind.
6 feet away before COVID happened.
Stay behind the white line.
I didn't know a lot of stuff. I didn't.
So, share a little bit about what your life's like today.
Yeah. What do you like to do for fun? How do you take care of yourself?
You got your own house, too. You didn't share that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I moved out. Well, that's another story, I guess. I went to court one day, and I said to Hannah, I'm moving out. I said, I'm still going to do groups, but I'm moving out. I think I'm going to move in with my sister. She was like, no.
No, you're not.
She's like, no. And I'm like, yes, I am. And she's like, no. And I'm like, I want to move out. And she's like, just give me some more time. Give me some more time. And I'm like, I'm tired of waiting. I want to move out. And she's like, I just need some more time. And then it was crazy. Caseworker, they were like talking. He was like, oh, you know, there's a system for like men and women that go through this computer like when you've been in and out of jail. And there's this caseworker, and he was like, oh, I'm looking for this woman, LaRose Daniels. She came across my system, and, you know, and she was like, oh, that woman happens to be in my program. And he was like, great, can we contact her? And they did, and I filled out some paperwork, and I was, like, blessed with, like, I don't know, what do you call it, a voucher or something?
Through Fuse Housing?
Mm-hmm.
A Fuse, they pay your rent and utilities, not... Do they pay your utilities?
No.
Just rent?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, so it's to help you, like, so I'm responsible for, like, all my utilities and other stuff. They just cover the rent, and, we're about to, my caseworker now, because when I first started Freedom, I was, like, part-time, and now I'm full-time, and, I guess, I don't know what you'd say, like, secure, I guess. I feel mm-hmm. like here, like,
more
they're not going to be just like, oh, you know, you're done with the workforce program, so bye, you're unemployed. I don't think they're going to do that.
No.
So, like, I'm pretty secure. So, like, I'm working with my caseworker now, like, oh, to take over, like, 10%, take over 30%. Like, it's like they help you.
Yeah.
And gradually, like, start paying your own rent.
Yeah. Yeah. So... But, you know, if I need help, though, like, they're there, you know, like, I need, you know, I'm still learning, and it's a house, so, like, the water is, like, separate, and, like,
I mean your water bill?
Yeah, the water bill, and I didn't, like, pay attention, and I was like, oh, God, what about the water bill? And I guess it had, like, racked up, like, 6 months, and it was, like,
I remember
$600, and I'm like, oh my God, I didn't have $600 and be able to live mm-hmm. and pay other utilities. So I was like, oh, I need help. Freedom helps me with that too.
I remember.
Yeah. I bet you, I call my landlord every month, like, hey, can you update me on that water bill? I said, I don't want that to happen again. I'm trying to learn how to do this. He said, well, we'll figure it out. He said, well, just maybe we'll send it to your address. Because for some reason, because he owns the house, it goes to his address. I don't know. But I'm on it now.
Aww.
I'm on it.
Good.
Yeah.
So what do you like to do for fun when you're not working?
Because
you work a lot.
I do work a lot. I like to lay in my bed and watch TV.
Yeah.
I love it.
I love that too.
I think that's because I'm getting old.
You are not old.
How old are you?
I'll be 30 this year.
You're not old.
It'll be my dirty 30.
Oh.
No, but I probably because I do work a lot.
Yeah.
But I like to go, you know, do roller coasters. I like doing the haunted houses. I love swimming. I love going swimming. I love listening to music. I love going to concerts.
You travel a lot now.
I do.
With your besties.
You like getting tattoos and piercings.
Yeah. Yep. I like getting tattoos. I ain't had no money to get any new ones.
I know. That's my problem, too.
I went off full sleeve.
I have an appointment tomorrow.
I'm just like, oh, I'm jelly.
I want to get... some more stuff to fill in here.
I'm getting a warrior woman tomorrow on my left arm.
That's nice.
I'm excited. It's been months. I usually go once a month. I know it's like it's kind of a habit, like a bad
It's like once you have one, you just, oh, you're just always going back.
Yeah, I'm covered, so.
I'm not as covered as you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what do you do for self-care besides lay in bed and watch TV and have good boundaries? Like, what does self-care look like for you in other ways?
Like, sometimes I just do what I want. I like to go tanning because that's kind of like my, where I can shut the world off and it's relaxing to me when I lay in the tanning bed. It's really relaxing to me. When I drive in the car by myself with my music playing, that's relaxing to me. And whatever I'm feeling, like if I'm feeling happy or betrayed or sad, like whatever I'm feeling, like I can usually like let myself feel it through like and cope with my music while I drive.
Yeah, cause you have multiple like music notes and music things on you.
Yeah.
Your tattoos.
Because I really, really enjoy music and driving. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to drive a truck one day.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that, what your dreams are.
I'm looking at different options because there's truck schooling. And then there's, like, companies that can hire you on and train you. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to, like, look at all my options and not just jump to the first one.
Do you want to be, like, a cross-country truck driver?
I want to start out in state first.
Okay.
And then work my way up.
Yeah.
You get to see the whole world and get paid doing it.
Yeah.
Or not the whole world, but at least the United States.
I really enjoy driving, so. And then what was the other question?
Just how do you take care of yourself? What do you do? I know you really love spending time with your nieces and nephews, too.
Oh, yeah.
I know they're really special to you.
They are really special to me. My sister...
Are those Hollies?
No,
they're my sister, Tara, who passed away with cancer. So it's like, I be feeling like, you know, when I have them, she's with me. I feel like they're the only piece of her that I have left on Earth. So, and, you know, before she died, you know, I guess I was in denial that when she was, my sister was still alive with the cancer, and she told me that she was dying, I just, like, didn't want to believe it. Because, you know, like, she had told me, like, I remember we was in my room, and she sat in my bed, and she's like, Rosie, I'm not going to be here. Promise me that you're going to be there for my kids when they graduate. You've got to be there. And I just, like, dismissed her, like, oh, Marie, you're going to be here. But she knew. Like, she knew she wasn't going to be here.
I think
and it's hard. She was trying to tell me.
Yeah. It's hard for people to look at someone and think, yeah, you're not going to be here one day. Like, mm-hmm. I just don't think that the human brain can really wrap... Like,
no.
Bring that to fruition. Like, I don't know. I just think it's hard.
So, even when I'm tired, I still, like, oh, I have to get the kids. I have to. Because I have to make sure, like, I spend time with them. Like, they know that I'm here. Mm-hmm.
They're really good kids, too.
They really are.
I like being around them.
They're really good kids.
Yeah.
The last question we have for you is, what is one thing you want to tell our listeners about human trafficking, mental health, or addiction?
I feel like for me, I don't know about everyone else, but for me, it started really young. And it's not really, it wasn't a choice. Like, I didn't just choose, like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter how bad in my heart I wanted to change and do something different, I did not know how.
Yeah.
So, mental health, like, your environment, support, all that's really important.
Yeah, I think that's great. Well, to wrap this up, we just want to say thank you for coming on and sharing your story. Yeah. I love being around you. You're so funny, and you're just like a light of warmth and happiness.
Thank you.
We appreciate you, the listeners, listening with us today, and we want to remind you to share your voice because your voice matters.